Good evening. How is everybody? All right. So you are going to be with me for this quarter. I am eager and grateful for the opportunity to stand before you. I take teaching Bible class very seriously, whether it's young adults or whether it's our teenagers or the little ones are teaching my kids at home. I take it very seriously, and I hope that that seriousness gets conveyed through what we're going to talk about tonight. I also like for us to have a good time when we teach Bible class. I think Bible class can be enjoyable and uplifting and exciting, and that's going to be my attempt tonight, is to make Bible class something exciting for you and for me, so that we will enjoy learning together. I roam. I wander, so don't let that stress you out. I think they can kind of keep me on the mic as long as I'm moving around okay. Our topic for this quarter is going to be influencing like Jesus. Influencing like Jesus. Chances are that just by saying the word influence, or any derivation of the word influence, makes you begin to think about things. You begin to think about what the word means, how it can be used in different ways. And what we're going to find out tonight, that what we're going to find out hopefully tonight and in the course of our study, is that we are all influencing someone about something. We are all influencing someone about something. And we will, through study and through analysis of Jesus' life, discover something that we all know but might need to be reminded of. And that's the fact that Jesus Christ was the master of influence. He did it better than it could ever be done. Jesus influenced people. He made them want to make changes in their lives. And before I get too far ahead of myself, let's kind of just roll through some of these slides. All right, so we want to start out with this premise of God's way always being better than our way. Now, again, I know that with the audience that I speak, I'm not going to have any opposition to that statement. God's way of doing things is always superior to man's. God's way of doing things is always superior to mine. The book that I am using, I'll kind of just be using it as a guide. I'll be providing, some information about it, but a lot of the information is going to be adapted from it. We're not going to necessarily follow the book specifically, but it is kind of a guide. It's Influencing Like Jesus. If you would like more information on it, I would be glad to share it with you. But think about a time when you had to influence someone. And the author of the book opens up with one that's probably very familiar to all of us. He's a father. I believe it says he has three boys, and he sits down with his three boys to have dinner. And you know what's on the menu? English peas. Yum. And he is attempting to influence his children to do what? Eat the peas. Now, if this dad has the patience of me, he says, put the peas in your mouth and swallow. That's my kind of influence. All right? But, Dad, put the peas in your mouth and swallow. But, Daddy, put the peas, and eventually my influencing turns into a lot more of yelling and raised voices, and when you're underneath my roof and kids in Africa ain't got enough to eat, and every other phrase that I'm sure I have borrowed and shared with you before. And so the book talked about how he went through all these different stages. He tried the authority principle, do it because I say so. He tried the social evidence. You know, he went with, look how nicely your brother is eating the peas. And then he went with what he called the limited availability principle. I'm setting the timer. You have 2 minutes to get it done. How many of us have set a timer before? All right. We've done that at my house many times. All right. And he said that the end result was not influence, but it was merely, what? How did he word it? It was not influence, but compliance. Yeah, it culminated in the boy's compliance. And how did he eat them? He put a single pea at the back of his throat and did what? Swallowed it and put a swallow of water down with it. So each pea goes in one at a time. So he's trying to influence the child to eat the peas because the peas are good for you. The peas are what we made, whatever. And he ends up not getting influence or not achieving influence, but he achieves compliance. I simply got the boy to do what I wanted him to do. And what we're going to discover is that that's not really influence. In a sense, it could almost be considered manipulation. And we'll get to that in just a second. But the Bible, from Genesis to Revelation, offers all sorts of instruction about becoming more influential in our little corner of the world. I hope that when you think of the term influential, you don't automatically jump ahead to people that are more famous or more popular or more plugged in than you. I hope you consider yourself to be an influential human being, because that is exactly what God calls us to be. He calls us to be influential human beings. And we'll talk more about that definition and what that means. What does it mean to be influential? Who are some influential people that have shaped your life? Now, when I teach Bible class, I like a little bit of interaction. So when you say something, I'm probably going to repeat it so everybody can hear it. But do let's try to keep our statements and our comments, 60 seconds or less, 45 seconds or less, something like that. So what does it mean to be influential? How would you guys define that? No right or wrong answers. We're all learning together. All right, setting an example, okay? Showing someone, hey, this is how I do it, okay? I like that. All right, inspiring and motivating, okay? All right, so we're talking about an attitude there overall. I like it. All right, so going on, who are some people that have shaped, influential people that have shaped your life? I'm fortunate enough that two of my folks are sitting right here, and I don't say that because they're here and I need anything out of them. I truly have been influenced in a positive way by my parents. Their influence came from other members in their family that influenced them. And as a result, I hope I am appropriately influencing my children. And what I've even discovered is that not only am I influencing my children, but what are my children doing to me? They're influencing me. They're affecting how I do things. They're causing me to look again at how I do things. And that's what we want to realize, is that we may be being influenced and have more opportunities to influence than we realize. You guys are all, for the most part, you guys are all my age-ish or a little bit older, okay? Some of you may be a little bit younger than me as I scan the audience. There's Hunter. He's a little bit younger than me. 2 or 3 years, maybe. Okay, and so if I talk about music and I ask you, hey, who's somebody musically that was influential on you or on the music industry in general, who would we come up with? Glenn, come on. Who? Come on, man. You got to name somebody everybody knows. All right. So I didn't go with him first. All right. We're going to mention this, and I'll get to my next slide, but influence can be positive or negative, and we'll talk about it in a second. Glenn comes up with some guy nobody's ever heard of. Come on, Glenn. All right. Come on. That's not him. All right. So who do we got here? The Beatles. Considered to be one of the greatest and most influential music entertainers, whatever you want to call them, even modern artists today. Bands like Weezer, who you may or may not have heard of, cite the Beatles as their influence. And we're talking 50 years later, these guys are still having influence on music. All right, we got Postage Stamp Elvis. I went with Postage Stamp Elvis. Elvis is considered to be a great influence on music. He changed, in some ways, what people thought about music. What about sports? Chris, I'll put you on the spot because you're my basketball guy. Everybody else here is football. 3 influential NBA players and we're kind of thinking of this era, three influential NBA players. Okay, go a little newer, same team. LeBron, MJ, and Kobe. Those guys are influential within their sport. You go to my school right now, Chris is having the greatest Laker conversation back there, which is a whole different conversation. You go to my school right now and you ask my kids who are 10, 11, 12, 9 years old, who's the best basketball player? You get one of those three answers 99% of the time. Those guys influenced basketball. Whether I like it or not, whether I'm a Kobe guy or a LeBron guy or an MJ guy, they're influential in what they do. Perhaps sometimes for the positive. Perhaps sometimes we might think morally for the negative occasionally. They are influential in what they do. What about that guy? Man, you talk about somebody who has some influence on me. There's a movie that was released this past summer. I believe it's called Will You Be My Neighbor, which is all about Mr. Rogers. In the during the time in which segregation was happening in our country, Mr. Rogers had multiple guests on his show intentionally to try to break down some of the walls of segregation. You know, people were being thrown out of swimming pools. We had people running into pools and throwing bleach on other people to cause them to get out of the pools. And what did Mr. Rogers do? He invited someone who was unlike him to come up to his house, and they cooled their feet together in a pool. Mr. Rogers was influential on me as a child. And we think about all of these people, and maybe they had a greater audience than we do. But the opportunity to influence is no less there. It's still there for us to influence other people. We just have to, like we talked about, do things the right way. And we talked briefly about manipulation versus influence. Influence means to affect, to produce, and that should be to produce and not produces, to produce some sort of change in attitude, behavior, or circumstances. That's what it means to influence someone. There is a change in attitude, behavior, or circumstance. Influence is a value-neutral concept. Now, I know that might be some terminology that we don't use every day, and so we're going to kind of explain that a little bit. The principles that we're going to discuss will be value-neutral. What does that mean? Value-neutral, all right? And then I give you a little statement here. A hammer is value-neutral. What do you think that means? All right, can't do anything with so you're thinking of it kind of as an inanimate object. The hammer's not going to use itself, right? Okay, we're getting there, Steve.
A hammer is a good thing when it's used to build a house, a bad thing when it's used to bust somebody's head.
Yeah, there you go. Steve got right to the point for us. The hammer is neither good or bad. It's all in how it's used. And the same thing is true of our influence. We've all got influence. How it is used will determine whether or not we have good influence or whether we have negative influence, bad influence. It's all in how it's used. And I believe the book mentioned a hammer can be used to build a house, and it can also be used to destroy a house. All in how it's used. And this first lesson, by the way, is kind of going to be an introduction to the whole purpose behind this class, an introduction to how we're going to approach this class. So we're kind of looking at things from the top row in a football stadium, and over the course of this class, we're going to get closer and closer to the sidelines and find out some of those more finite details that will be useful to us. But influence principles are simply tools. Learn to use them well, and you will have a very useful toolkit to be a more effective agent of change in the sphere of influence God has entrusted you. You have a sphere of influence. All right, we're going to talk about that a little bit more. There is a group of people that choose to be around you, or you choose to be around them, over which you have the potential to influence. It could be two people. It could be like me. I have an opportunity to influence 380 people every day of my life. I have 440. I have 400 students, and I have about 40 faculty and staff that I see every day. My sphere includes those 440 people and anybody else that I might come across. What am I doing to greater influence them, to be a greater influence of them for the cause of Christ? Y'all know that ultimately that's where we're going. We want to influence them for the cause of Christ. Every influence principle that we're going to discuss in this class has one important characteristic. Jesus used it while walking among us. You know, we have a lot of really, really awesome information when it comes to the amount of time that Jesus was here on earth. We have incredible resources. We have lots of interactions and conversations and stories and things that he did. And when Jesus did things, he changed people. How did he do it? Everything that we're going to learn is going to be based on something that Jesus said or Jesus did. It's going to be inferred at the very least from something Jesus said or did. You know, there are lots of instances in the Bible, and I didn't write any down or think of any, so you guys can share them to me. There are lots of instances of persuasion in the Bible. Some were persuasive through whatever means necessary, all right? And this isn't always good. Can you think of a time in the Bible where somebody persuaded someone, but it wasn't necessarily for good? I mean, we wouldn't have to go too far in the book of Genesis to find something like that, would we? Yeah. How long was it before the devil was persuading Eve and then Eve was persuading her husband? All right? Other instances of where persuasion was used, but it didn't necessarily have positive outcome. Jacob and Esau. All right? Definitely. All right? And so we can look at the difference here between just getting somebody to do something and truly influencing their life for the better. Okay? And as I'm going through this, folks, if you guys have any comments or thoughts, y'all just speak up. I've more than embarrassed myself up here before when teaching, and so it can't get any worse than this. You're not going to upset me with your question. You're not going to make me mad with your question. All I can probably do is try to answer it, yes, no, or I'll get back to you. So if you have a question or a thought, please, please share it with me. All right, the conclusion we will use for this class will be, if Jesus did it, then we can be pretty confident that it's okay for us to do it also. That's kind of our conclusion. Because maybe you sometimes wonder, well, you know, what's okay and what's not okay? We're going to come to the conclusion that if Jesus did it, we're probably good to go. All right? If Jesus did it, we're probably good to go. We will use and study other examples and influence techniques such as Paul, Nathan, Solomon, Nehemiah, Daniel, and so on. But we won't use anything that we cannot infer directly from Jesus' teaching or actions. Like, we might come up with something that Jesus did and then see similarly how Daniel did the same thing. But we're taking our focus, we're taking our first thoughts from Jesus. All right? Taking our first thoughts here from Jesus. All right, so why study influence at all? I need to know this. Is that font, like Glenn, is that font big enough? All right, I'm going to stick with that PowerPoint font and this style so that I don't have to worry about that. That's 40 point, so I just need to make sure that that's good to go. Old woman in the back, can you see it? Yeah, no comment? All right. Talking to Patty, by the way, not anybody else. Felicia thought I was talking to her. I'm nice to Felicia. Come on now. I'm kidding. All right. So why study influence at all? And we kind of touched on this earlier. God calls us to be influencers. God calls us to be influencers. You know, just here in this congregation, our entire purpose for being here is to influence others for the cause of Christ. That's why we're here. We want to learn more about how I can teach that person at work, at school, that's in my business with me, that checked me out at the grocery store, that handed me my food in the drive-thru. I want to influence them for Christ. God calls all of us to be influencers. The Great Commission is a call to influence others. Making someone a disciple of Christ is to effect great influence upon them. We talked about changing someone's attitude and behavior for good. Teach someone to become a Christian. Encourage them to become a Christian. Influence them to become a Christian. and you have changed their life. Influence someone to become a Christian, and you have given them the greatest thing that you can ever give a person. And I need to do a better job of that. When I realize what a powerful tool I have been entrusted with, what a great commission God has called me to, man, I need to treat that a little differently. Sometimes I take that information and I stick it in my pocket and I keep it to myself. I need to do better about that. Making someone a disciple of Christ is to affect great influence upon them. All right, what about other commissions God has given us? What about the cultural commission? Now, you won't find it necessarily named that in the Bible. What about the domestic commission? Let's kind of chat about each one of these. So if we were going to talk about the Great Commission, we would be talking about our call to influence who? Everyone. Go into all the world. There is no portion of the world that God does not intend for us to take His gospel message. Nowhere. He intends for us to take it even to people that we know might reject Him. That's hard. So when we think about the Great Commission, it's a little daunting. It's a little stressful, to be honest with you. All right? Then we take that circle and we kind of narrow it down just a little bit, and we have what we call the Cultural Commission. This is everything around us, everything within our direct power to influence. And I've got some more slides about this kind of stuff, but I wanted you guys to see this visual. All right? We've got the Great Commission, we've got the Cultural Commission, and then what was the last one we mentioned? The Domestic Commission. The Domestic Commission. Let's chat about each one real quick. The Great Commission, easily stated and defined, tough to execute. Not that the gospel's tough, but there's a lot of people in this world. There's a lot of lost people. There's a lot of people that are directly opposed to the things that we stand for. Great Commission is easy to state. Hey, convert everyone. Difficult to execute. But we don't need to be discouraged, because within that Great Commission is also the Cultural Commission. This is the shaping of our workplaces, our schools, our public policies, our media, and our entire society in ways that please God. We are all a part of our culture. I taught this same information to our college and young professionals maybe a year ago this exact time, or maybe it was in the spring. I can't quite remember. And we defined our culture as what's around us. Our culture is what's around us, all right? And what that also might cause us to do is realize that we might need to broaden our culture just a little bit. We need to be influencers over people who are like us. And when I say like us, I mean Christians. You know, you can get into, you know, race, gender, all that different kind of stuff. But at the same time, we need to also be influencing those who are not like us. We need to be going after groups that are not exactly like us. Our entire society should be influenced in ways that please God. We all have some people that we have an opportunity to influence in our culture. All right, any thoughts? Y'all are awfully quiet, but I am kind of going at things. Mr. Harry? Oh boy, I don't like those. I'm a fastball kind of guy. What's so great about it? Well, I mean, I don't know where you're going necessarily, but I'm thinking the end result. The fact that God's going to give us a home with Him if we're faithful. Is that what you're... How did the person that you heard it from word it? Right. Oh, it's very, and that's why I use the words daunting. It's you know, like and I don't mean like woe is me, but it's kind of like stressful when I think about the people out there that don't know the Lord. Like that stresses me. It gives me literal anxiety. And I think that's good, but at the same time, that anxiety should move me towards what? Action. That's what it ought to do. It ought to move me towards action. Okay, I realize that there's this problem. What am I willing to do about it? What uncomfortable situation am I willing to insert myself into in order to affect cause? Because it's not all going to be sunshine and rainbows when you present the gospel to somebody. It's not. Yes, sir. Right. Right. Right, right. And I have heard that before, that when we talk about going, it's talking about as we go. But even still, yeah, there's a lot of people as I go. A lot of people. Right, absolutely. Absolutely, yeah. Other thoughts? That's good info. Miss Connie? And I wish that made me go, oh, I am so surprised, but I'm not. I'm not surprised by that. But what that does make me, Connie, is it makes me hopeful that they might hear about him. It makes me hopeful that they might hear about him. All right? Let's keep moving here. There's a cultural war going on, a battle for the hearts and minds of our children, and God does not want us on the sidelines for that battle. So being involved in the cultural commission is being involved in enacting change and enacting good things for future generations that come after us. And then we talked about the domestic commission. God gives us a commission to train up our children. Proverbs 22:6, He commissions us to teach them to obey and love God, to love our neighbors, to love our neighbors, be salt and light, be good spouses, be good to other people in our household, in a sense, encouraging and guiding them ever closer towards God. You know, one thing we jumped right into is we jumped right into the most important way to influence someone, which is to influence them towards Christ, towards becoming a Christian. But sometimes influence is simple. Sometimes influence is, hey, I've got a Christian friend, but he talks dirty. I want to influence him to stop doing that. I've got a Christian friend or a coworker who maybe is not a Christian. They have this terrible habit. It's killing them. It's bad for them. It's causing them to make that bad decisions. I want to influence them to stop doing that and to do it in a way where we don't seem high and mighty or holier than thou, or that we're hating on them or we're coming down on them with a whole bunch of, you know. How can we influence someone to be? I want to influence my daughters to be kind. I want to influence my daughters to put others first. That's not going to happen on its own. Sure, I can teach them to quote the plan of salvation. I can teach them to say all their books of the Bible. But am I teaching them to be kind? And am I teaching them to go sit with the kid at lunch that has no friends? Because that's the kind of kid that I want to raise. I want to raise that kind of kid who looks out for others and looks for opportunities to influence themselves. So yeah, we jumped right into, hey, let's influence everybody for the cause of Christ. Yes, that is true, and we're going to talk about that at every step of the way. But there's also those little influences. Maybe you know somebody who has a short temper and it gets them in trouble. And I just like to influence them to be a little more even-tempered, less apt to just fly off the handle. How can I do that? Jesus gives us some ideas on how we're going to do that. All right, there's a passage from the book that I wanted to read. That's to remind myself to read it. This is directly from the book. God gives us opportunities all around us every day to influence people and circumstances. Whether you're a concerned citizen writing a letter to the editor, or a preacher stepping into the pulpit, or a teacher instructing your class, or a stay-at-home mom shaping your children's worldview, or a manager trying to grow your organization or lead your people in God's way, or an activist trying to convince your legislature to change a law, or an evangelistically minded believer encouraging someone to consider seriously the claims of Jesus Christ, or even if you're just a dad trying to get your kids to eat their peas, everyday influence opportunities abound. Thanks be to God that He hasn't left us on our own to figure out how to do this stuff. He's revealed to us in Scripture more than a dozen influence principles that He gives us and He gives us His Holy Spirit to empower us to do it successfully. So the premise there is that everybody has the potential to cause influence in their lives. All right? I've probably got about 6 minutes left. All right. God empowers us to be influenced, okay? Now, that term, empower, how would you guys define that word, empower? If you empower someone, what do you do? Danny? Mm-hmm. Absolutely. I couldn't have said it any better. Did everybody hear him? He said, you give them permission and you give them the tools necessary to do what it is you're trying to get them to do. Okay? You know, it's not right for me to ask my kids to clean the floor and then not give them the tools that they need to do that. That's not fair. All right? Maybe that's a poor example, but I think you guys understand what I'm saying. We need tools. We need things to use. Yes, sir. Absolutely. Yeah, absolutely. And that's a perfect example of how influence works. See, we hope that this influence isn't just an isolated incident. We hope that it becomes a culture of influence. Because remember that big circle of the Great Commission and how daunting, and maybe that wasn't the right word, but how stressful that seemed? It's going to seem a whole lot less stressful with a whole culture of Christians who want to change and want to make the world a better place. Absolutely, man. That's an awesome thought. Thank you for sharing that. All right? God wants us to co-labor with Him. God's putting in the work, y'all. He's putting in the work. He is wearing Himself out, loving us and providing us with information. We got to co-labor with Him. We got to do our part. I've used the example before when people say things like, "Ah, man, I just feel so far from God right now." Guys, God's never moved. He's right where He's always been. We're the ones who step away from Him. And I'm speaking to my own self here. What does Chris say? Stomping on my own toes. You know, when I feel estranged from God, it's because I've moved from Him. And I need to move back with Him. He's laboring. He's working so hard. How hard am I working? All right? Being an agent of change is not just another thing on our to-do list. You know, sometimes Patty will take the girls out of town and she'll go see her aunt, or she took them up to West Virginia one time to see her her other aunt. And while she's gone, I always get a to-do list. All right? And that's fine. I don't care. That's fine. I'm all for it. But you know what? I do it like a man. And what do? 3 hours till Patty's going to be home? It's go time. And I just try to get I've delayed it as long as I can, and I got to try to get the bathroom tiled and the driveway concreted before Patty gets home in 3 hours. All right? I have just thought of it as a to-do list, just something that's got to be done. Guys, influence is about more than that. It's about wanting people to change, not because we want to be right, but because we want what's best for them. We want them to believe what we believe, which is that the Christian life is the greatest life a person can ever live. We got to influence people to do that. It's a central part of our purpose, a divine calling, a sacred way of life, a habit of being God's conduit to get people onto God's agenda. Did you ever think about you may be someone's only connection to Christ-like living? The only connection that they have. You know, you talk about how influential our youth are, how easily influenced they are. You know, Hunter could be the only contact that some of those kids have between him and God, or between that person and God. That's big, y'all. It's powerful, and we got to treat it as such. All right, so we're going to talk about making a plan. All right, we're going to talk about some questions that you can ask. There are some things I want you to specifically ask. Okay, you're probably already thinking of two or three people. All right, that's good. That means your mind's in this. Is there a person or two in your life whom you'd like to influence in some meaningful way? I think we can all say yes. 20 times over, yes. Is there a particularly difficult conflict that's been festering for a long time? So it's not necessarily just, you know, the decision for a person to become a Christian. You can use the power of influence to solve a grudge, to have peace in a relationship that you've never had peace in before. Is there a big opportunity before you that requires you to be more persuasive than you've ever been? We're going to learn principles that are going to hopefully help us with these kinds of things. When we finish this quarter, hopefully you'll have some plans and principles to put into practice to making headway in those different situations. And so you're probably thinking, planning your influence? That seems really, you know, thought out and rigid. You know, I'm not sure that's how influence is supposed to be natural. No. Does it have to be that premeditated? Does it have to be that much work, that formal? Yes. You know why? When things matter, we often create some kind of plan. At the beginning of the month, I make a financial plan for our family. This is how much money we've got. This is how much we want to save. This is how much Big Red can blow on video games. This is how much we're going to spend on eating out, and so on and so forth. There's a plan. Because having enough money to last the end of the month is pretty important. So if we're talking about something as important as changing human beings, we better have a plan. Can you imagine wanting to send your kids off to college someday without creating a financial plan to do so? Can you imagine a builder starting construction without an architectural plan? Or a professional coach stepping onto a field without a game plan? Or a business or a church trying to grow without a strategic plan? Or a general engaging an army without a battle plan? Or a teacher stepping up to the lectern without some sort of lesson plan? When something's important, we plan. So that kind of concludes our first lesson on just kind of what the class is going to be about in general. As by way of introduction, I'm always going to try to introduce the next week's topic. So our first three principles are actually all going to be about us, all right? And they're going to be under the premise of, before we ever say a word to someone, we need to make sure that these things have been handled to the best of our ability. It's sort of like the pregame plan. All right, before I'm going to go try to influence this person, what is the old saying? You better have your ducks in a row. There are some things. Well, not he can't be perfect, but there's some things we need to do. The first three principles will happen before we ever say a word. They're going to be praying for change, be a person others will follow, and know your audience. Those three things all have to happen before we can influence someone. And we'll talk about, I may try to cram those three into two lessons, because I've actually got to combine a couple lessons to make it through. Any questions or thoughts as we close out this evening? I really look forward to our study. I hope you will as well. If there's anything I can do to help you as we study together, y'all let me know. Thank you.